This is the one with proto-minions.
A new old companion.
An old soon-to-be companion.
And a big fat mothership.
It's called Partners in Crime.
Here we go!
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Cyber, Zandun, wow!
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when? Who Back When.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land, and welcome to another excellent episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Slack Doctor.
I am Ponkin, and with me in the Ponkin Enterprises studio today is none other than the Drew Meister himself.
Drew!
Hello!
Hello, yes. And to my left is... No one. It's just us.
It is just us.
You're going to have to wait until next time's review to hear what Nick thinks about Donna Noble.
Oh, yeah, that is very true. Oh, God. I've been dreading this moment.
I've been craving this moment. It's been sweet anticipation for a year or more.
So can I ask, did you like Donna Noble from the get-go?
Of this episode?
No, from like
the Runaway
this
Bride.
Was, 2000 and... Well, okay, yeah, sure. Actually, yeah, that's a very good point.
When the
yes.
Runaway Bride was first broadcast, way back when, who back when, whatever. Yeah?
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Did you like Catherine Tate outside of this? Like, had you already encountered Catherine Tate?
Aha, well, yes. Maybe that's where my affinity and affection for her is brought over from.
Interesting. So I had never, ever encountered her before The Runaway Bride. And if you are wondering how I feel about her performance in Runaway Bride, ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land, listen to our review of Runaway Bride. Spoiler alert, I didn't like her.
I gave it a 4.1.
Good episode, terrible companion of the week.
We may be in for an interesting podcast / series. You don't have to be won over right away.
No.
If right at the end, past Turn Left and Sontaran Splooge Fest or whatever it's called. And
Sontaran Splooge Fest.
Yeah, followed quickly by Sontaran Splooge Fest 2, 3, 4 and 5. I assume that's how it works. Those round heads are so smooth.
Oh, I would 100% anywhere. Watch this. I don't know what we're talking about, but I would watch the shit out of it. So,
but instead, you have to watch the shit out of Donna Noble.
Oh. I'm really dreading this because for 3 years we've been doing this. I don't know when the first time was that Donna Noble was mentioned. I'm pretty sure that Flappy mentioned her at some point. Well, regardless, I think this is a conversation that has been had in the background of Who Back When for bloody aeons. And now we're finally at the point where we're going to have Donna Noble as a recurring character.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah!
Ooh.
Should we jump into a bite-sized chunk of Who?
Let's do that, and I'll put my dismay on hold.
3, 2, 1, and
time for us to synopsize,
lovify and summarize.
So take a pew
and grab a brew
and listen to this overview, this free-for-all
we like to call
a bite-sized chunk of Who.
Bite-sized chunk of Who.
Wow, what a great new bumper.
Amazing. Those singers who did it, those professional standard sounding croonsmen. I mean, how did you get them in? How did you afford their enormous
fees?
It cost
an arm and a leg, let me tell you.
I bet.
Yeah, and one of them wanted sexual favours. Fresh off the boat, so to speak, the Doctor is back in London, investigating the goings-on at Adipose Industries, a fat-burning conglomerate promising to transform Britain's waistlines.
Unbeknownst to him, Donna Noble is doing the exact same thing, in between getting lectured by her mum and spilling her guts to her kindly granddad, who in turn happens to be none other than Bernard Cribbins.
Alien wibbly-wobblies ensue.
B-Scout over, you are welcome.
Aren't you just? Where do you want to start, dude?
At the start.
At the start?
There's no cold open. And we're immediately looking at Catherine Tate walking down the street, very much like Martha did a year ago. Except she's not the bolshy, shouty person you maybe...
Remember from, what's it called?
The Runaway Bride.
That's the one.
And which you were hoping to get your hackles instantly raised. She's quite subdued for the first... half of this episode, I'd say.
Yeah, it's when we get to that point, and I kind of like that scene, by the way, the sort of weirdo, wibbly-wobbly meet-cute, where they're facing off from their own respective windows.
Yes.
I like that scene.
That's a great
scene.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Oh, man, I would have hammered on until you did.
Love that scene. Hate her. Oh man, do I hate her. It's that's where she turns into the Donna Noble that I remember disliking.
Even though that scene is so great, it's just opening up her vast tranches of potential. Her huge tracts of potential.
Is it that she's too loud, and the fact that she's mouthing muted, I automatically fill that blank with just her constantly shouting?
Well, I'm it's quite hard not to do that. There's an excellent device of RTD.
Oh.
That you're expecting Donna to come in and be instantly loud from the get-go, and here she is, silenced, and you're filling in the blanks.
But...
I mean, you are filling in the blanks with exactly what she would be doing.
I'm filling in the blanks with accuracy. I mean, when we get to the end, and she's... Oh, it's so desperate and awkward when she's got all of her luggage and all that stuff.
It's not desperate and awkward, she's well-prepared.
Oh, no, it's really not. Like, he looks like the guy who really, really doesn't want the girl to move in. It's like, no, we just had a one-night stand, we're not in a relationship, what is this?
Okay, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's super awkward. But at that point, when he says, like, oh, I just want a mate, her reaction to that is like, oh, you know what? Maybe RTD made us think that we were going to have a new subdued Donna Noble, but her instant reaction, oh, no.
Don't you try that on with me, sunshine.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Don't you come over here, a pan-European sticker-nothing, sticking it up inside me in your little box.
Okay,
something
so,
like that.
Yes, exactly. The fact that when you do that voice, you have to, like...
I become Catherine Tate.
Yeah, you have to assume this complete stance. Like
screenshot on whobackwhen.com.
Of life.
Of me being Catherine Tate. Can hardly tell the difference.
I'm going to put a picture of Drew being Catherine Tate.
Oh, just you try it. You come over here and take that picture. I'll stick that phone right where you don't want it.
Yeah. That picture is on whobackwhen.com.
Brilliant.
So, my point is, why can't you just lean back and say that? Why do you have to look like you're being run over by a tractor? It's...
because she's zesty and full of fire.
Oh, she's too loud. So, why do you like Donna Noble? I'm sorry, this is very likely going to turn... Like, a third, at least, of this podcast is going to turn into the Donna Noble podcast, isn't it?
We have to address her at the outset of this series.
Yeah. Let's talk about the really annoying elephant in the room. Why...
Rude? Rude?
Why do you like Donna Noble so much?
Well, haven't we been suffering for the last year with Martha Jones?
Yeah.
And how her presence just fades into the background and she might as well not even be there in certain episodes. With Donna Noble, there is no way that she's just going to shrink into the wallpaper during an episode. She's always there. She's always going to have a moment or three or five.
And she's not too in your face?
I don't think so. She was in your face once in this episode. I'd have loved Martha to be a bit more in my face.
Oh, really?
And also, we're now freed from the shackles. Yeah, since you could tell me she loves me and all that stuff.
So is it just by comparison?
A lot of it is by comparison. I mean, we're freed now from the Doctor having... Well, we're not quite freed from Rose. We'll get to that. But we're free from the pale Rose imitation or wannabe and... Now Donna Noble is a completely different person, a completely different companion. She can take the series in a new direction. And I thought that actually came through in other ways in this episode. She brought a freshness to it. They did different things in various different ways, like the camera work. Some of the shots were different.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't think so much about the camera work. I thought the ambience of the episode was already very different.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know if I would give thanks to her for that.
Well, no. But
I mean, the fact that the whole thing was very cloak and dagger, it was edited in a way that was slightly more fast-paced, a little bit more dynamic than usual, maybe.
Yeah, it actually suited the music a bit better.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But that's not her.
No, it's not. But at the same time, I just feel like Series 3 as a whole was, like, running on empty.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the storylines, it's that difficult third album. It's going to be... It's going to be tricky. You need to bring in new blood and new ideas for Series 4.
And paradoxically, they're doing that by bringing in old blood.
Yes.
Do you think that she was originally destined to be part of this show? Like, was she already intended to be a companion?
What I'd like to think is they had so much fun filming The Runaway Bride.
That they just... Oh, they requested to have her back.
Yeah.
No, no, we can't have Doctor Who without her. You know what? I really hope that by the middle of her run... How long is she going to be on the show, by the way?
A series.
Just one series?
Yeah, because after this, Tennant then starts his long death spiral.
Oh, I see. Oh, great. Buzz. Yay, finally something uplifting on this show. But the okay, fine. I'm hoping that by the halfway point of this series, I'm hoping to really, really love Don Noble. Because that's sort of what happened with Eccleston. I remember I hated Eccleston the first time I saw him. And then halfway through rewatching him now, for Who Back When, I was like, oh, no, he's great. He's fantastic. Probably my least favorite of the new Who's, but he's still fantastic. Very possibly I'll feel the same about her.
Yeah. Possibly. Yeah, okay. Possibly. Hold on to that possibility. That possibility is crucial. I'm glad you haven't already just condemned her.
No. I've got an open mind.
Okay.
All right.
How about you take a point?
At some point, we're going to have to discuss the aliens and the alien plot. Let's wait with that for a second. We once again have Wilfred Mott. And I love Wilfred Mott.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the fact that we have Bernard Cribbins. Bernard Cribbins, such an incredible... We've mentioned Bernard Cribbins as the incredible Whovian legend that he is on so many occasions on Who Back When before. Shire! Cribbins!
Sorry.
Every time that we encounter him. We've even encountered him on Audio Who, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, the second or third ever audiobook that we reviewed, which is a terrible one.
Horror on Glam Rock?
That's the one.
Nice!
The Horror of Glam Rock.
Sorry.
It's pretty terrible, but it does star Bernard Cribbins, and Cribbins is mesmerizing in it. Right. I love Bernard Cribbins.
Great.
At first, I was a little bit miffed that we have that weird Star Wars thing of everyone has to be related. Like, there's never a coincidental, you know, liaison. No connection can be tenuous. Everything has to be, like, a bloodline.
Okay.
So clearly the dude whom we've met and who is charismatic and who had like, more than two lines, clearly he's related to the companion.
Yeah.
And well, now I kind of like that.
Well, yeah, I think you should.
I'm pleased.
Because what's he going to... He's just going to be an elderly gentleman who her mum takes care of. It's just simple, you know.
He could just be the dude who sells newspapers as well.
Possibly, but we're dealing with a kids show here. Kids, you know, inevitably are in the bosom of their family. These relationships are just the easiest to understand.
Did you like that he's... Oh, wait, hang on. So he's a pensioner. He's making an extra buck by selling newspapers. We encountered him the last time in the last episode, in fact.
Yeah.
How weird. I didn't consider that. Yeah, that was the last episode with Kylie and everyone.
Even in the Christmas special, they were setting up.
Yeah.
They were laying out, oh, the string and the jam.
Oh, my God. RCD is so naked and sticky right now. He knows exactly what's going to happen.
Dripping with Christmas cake.
Oh, I'm so aroused. Intellectually.
Mind boner.
I found his character thoroughly charming.
Yes, that was the word I was going to use.
He's so endearing and so charming. I love that he spends every evening going up a hill to watch the stars. I felt kind of sorry for him, but absolutely loved the fact that he was looking in the wrong direction as the UFO is behind him.
That actually made me laugh out loud, and I can't remember the last time I properly lolled at Doctor Who, but just lovable old Cribbins there,
and the
just
end.
Gazing happily away from it.
And the end, as he's dancing around, having just seen his granddaughter in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
He's so happy. I'm filled with joy by seeing Cribbins so happy.
Soundbite Cribbins.
Cribbins bites.
That's Jumanda. That's it.
There you go, that's what he sounds like.
Loved it.
Oh, absolutely love him. Why couldn't she have inherited a little bit of his charm?
Well, in saying that, I do have to admit that the scene where they were together...
Yeah.
He did act her off the screen.
He does.
Certainly at the beginning. I mean, as they got into the scene, they sort of evened out a bit. But at the start, it's like... Donna is just talking and delivering lines, and you've got Cribbins fully inhabiting his character. He's been up that hill for the last 20 years every Saturday night, or every night.
Yeah, exactly.
And I completely believed it, whereas Donna's just sauntering up to do some exposition, and you're getting an insight into Cribbins' life, is what it seemed like to me.
But do you think that's because we're meant to already know her, just by sheer virtue of having been chased around London with her?
I think...
Two Christmases ago, or whenever it was.
I think it's because of a deep psychological need to feel affinity to the elderly male members of our tribe. I think that's all it is. I think it's the patriarchy at work, and that...
Oh, you think so? Wait, you think it's the patriarchy as opposed to the elderly sort of mentor figure?
Well, the... the elderly mental figure and the patriarchy are symbiotic. They both drive each other up in significance.
Well, imagine that Bernard Cribbins were her grandmother instead, and the grandmother could then have been this sage lady, this wise family member, you know, the mater familias,
okay,
who dispenses wisdom left, right and centre and is a bit quirky and kind of in with it, you know, a granny with an iPod, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Why couldn't that have happened? I mean, yeah, Sarah Jane has already got her own spin-off series, so it can't be her.
Well, like, that clearly would have worked, and I think it probably would have worked in much the same way. It's not necessarily the patriarchy. It's just, I think, stop your theory at elderly. I think that's what it is.
You think if Yoda had been a woman, the Star Wars fans would have gone just as crazy for her?
No, only because it was done in the 70s.
True.
I think so. I think you need, like, the old wizard character to be male.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is Cribbins not the old wizard here?
No.
He's not a lovable Merlin?
He is definitely not a Merlin. Is he? In what way is he a Merlin? He's not the wise...
He's vaguely interested in science.
Oh, well, if that doesn't define Merlin, then I don't know what does. No, I mean, he's not the wise man, right? He's no sage. He's not that clever and so on and so forth. He's just... He's the heart.
Yeah.
He's not the mind. He's the heart.
Okay.
And the... I don't know, this potential spoiler. Do we get to know her mother any better?
Well, us talking up Cribbins has made me think about Theresa May, Donna's mother, because that's who it is. And, yeah, she is just a nag, isn't she? And she has similar naggy, cackly friends who she goes to the bingo with, and there's not
so
much
her character
there.
Never changes.
Well, certainly not in this episode. I mean, she may come
back.
No,
not in this episode, but that's what I mean. Like, throughout this season,
well,
do we get
know.
To know her the way that we got to know Martha's family, for example?
I can't remember, but I would bet my house on we get to know Cribbins a lot better than her.
Oh, certainly,
and
yeah,
we
yeah.
don't get to see enough of either of them.
Okay, all right. But Cribbins does, it turns into the Cribbins show after a while. I can't remember when that is. That's much later, isn't it?
Cribbins is the pivot at the end. He's the crux.
See, I don't remember this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, I don't remember.
It's like the whole universe rests on Cribbins' shoulders. He's
really?
The Atlas of Doctor Who at the end of Tennant's run.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay. Should we talk about the plot, maybe?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's actually jump into this episode.
I know we're not going through it plot by plot point, but we could just be talking about IMDb here.
I know. That's true. That's very true. Okay, so start us off, man.
Okay. Donna's walking along. She's doing her investigations into Adipose Industries.
Yes.
Now, I loved the parallels set up throughout the first 15, 20 minutes of this episode.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and I also thought that was one of the innovative structures they used that they haven't used before. And I did not know what was going on. And I was in constant tension, thinking, well, surely they've met up pre-episode, and she's actually a companion already, and they're both after the same scheme. And so there was just so much cognitive dissonance when they were
really?
Completely
so you were thinking
unrelated.
We're jumping in after the get on board the TARDIS point.
Yeah, in Medias Res or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I didn't think so. I agree, though. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was very, very good, including the point where it gets really slapsticky when they're both trying to get something printed.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, bobbing up and down. It's actually really fun. All of a sudden, the episode suddenly takes a turn to the silly and absurd. It turns into farce, and just for that tiny scene. And it's really fun. Actually, two scenes. That one and the meet cute, the actual window scene.
Yes.
Which is great as well.
Yes, which can't be said enough that it is great. And I can't lip read, but
it works.
I could understand
them
most of the way through. And you remember the Doctor in the last series with his big square mouth going...
What was it? He probably had a note. There was probably like a producer note. Someone just said, like, I'm sorry, but no one knows what you're mouthing.
Yeah.
Like, just fix this.
Instead
and then
of
got a dialect coach,
he had a mouthing coach
exactly.
come in between series on their limited budget and everything. What did you think of the... So they're working at cross purposes. Unknowingly, Donna's nicking his sheet of paper, so he has to go back to the worker who's basically stalking him. And
who clearly just wants to go to Bone Town with him.
The Bone Zone.
The Bone Zone in Bone Town.
No,
I think you'll find
Town.
That I think you'll find that the Bone Zone is part of Bone Town.
No, the Bone Zone is part of Pound Town, which is next to Drillsville.
In Shag Alley.
Yes. Overlooked by Fuck Mountain. So, yes, but we have a villain. We haven't talked about the villain
yes.
at all.
Yes.
Okay. The villain is Miss Foster, working for Adipose Industries.
Not her real name. I mean, I'm assuming that she's not human. Where is she from? She's also not an Adipose. What is she?
That's true. She's just some sort of rogue humanoid agent parachuted in. She knows that the Doctor's an alien.
Yeah.
And she's been scouring the galaxy for fat planets.
Yeah. And apparently we are the fattest. Well, yeah. England is the fattest.
Oh, we are up there. I mean, we may look to America and go, ha, 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 you're crap. But that's only because we're crap in the exact same ways on a slightly smaller scale.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So, okay, Miss Foster, what do you think of Miss Foster, Leon?
Okay, there are two aspects of Miss Foster. One that I really like... And the other that I like slightly less.
Okay.
The part that I really like is the, holy smokes, sophisticated, strong female character. She has a sonic device, which is like comes out of nowhere. She can figure stuff out. She's very cool and so on and so forth.
Yep.
The part of her that I don't like is the part that has to be uber theatrical. Characterized by the giant levers that she has to pull in order to, you know, activate her machine.
Not helped by some unsubtle musical cues. Ba ba ba!
Oh, I don't remember that at all.
Well, I mean, the music isn't subtle at all in this episode, so that was well encompassed by the same overall failing. Although it helps with the jaunty bits.
It just seems slightly more violent. And she's perfectly happy to have civilians, innocent civilians, be turned into little adipose creatures.
Yes, up to a million.
Up to a million,
if it goes well.
So she's evil. Obviously, she's not... Oh, I don't know what I'm saying. Yeah, I liked her, basically, summa summarum. Sorry.
Okay, because I did not.
Explain why.
I thought she was this series' Lazarus.
What?
But with even less of a backstory.
Oh, yeah. No, she has no backstory.
Yeah. I mean, she has a motivation, a sort of mad egotistical drive, much like Lazarus does. I mean, yeah. Lazarus also has the benefit of wartime experiences to inform his evil. She doesn't even have that. She's just strutting about the stage like a foster mother peacock. And beyond that, beyond her service of fulfilling the evil vacuum in the plot, there's really nothing.
But that's really all... I take your point. But I don't think this episode is about that. I don't think this episode is about an evil alien plot that we need to delve into. I don't think we need to get to know the perpetrator. We never even find out what the adipose do. What happens to all these babies? Why do they have to impregnate? There's a hint of a backstory there. We never get it. I think this whole episode is one giant excuse to get Donna to have that awkward, no, you didn't just bone me and leave, it meant something moment with the Doctor at the end.
Apart from, didn't just not bone me and leave, sunshine, don't you go talking like you did.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, they didn't bone. For
don't you stick it in my butthole. I'm sorry. This may be a feature. No, you're absolutely right. The service of this episode is to get Donna and the Doctor back together, yeah, shooting off through the galaxy who knows where next week.
Yeah. So if you're going to have 50% of the episode that is largely Donna-tastic, even though it's very subdued Donna because she's sad, she's lonely, she's not annoying when she's on her own. She's only annoying when she's playing off the Doctor, to me, I mean. But if you're going to have 50% of the episode devoted to that and the other 50% of the episode having them just cooperate, let's have them on screen, let's have them help each other and build up an excuse to have her board the TARDIS, because yeah, it does not seem natural to me at all.
She's been ready for this for a year. The first chance she gets, then she's in it.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. Psycho hose beast. That is not what you want to do. That's from Wayne's World.
Psycho hose beast.
That just reeks of desperation.
Now, she can see how pathetic the Doctor is. The Doctor is the desperate, pathetic one here.
Yes, he's also desperate and pathetic because he will take her over being lonely.
You have a scene of him just talking to the TARDIS, going, oh, it's a flitchy-witchy-switch bitch.
And then pan across an empty TARDIS.
Yeah, the TARDIS
actually,
is just going,
which is great,
room, room, and the Doctor sees the void. The existential abyss beyond the end of his ego.
Sorry, a slight tangent.
Well, no, sorry. Just to finish off the villain. The reason why I am drawing attention to her slightly lacking, perhaps, in some ways, is that when I came to the end of this episode to give it a rating, I thought that as part of a Doctor Who episode, you have to take into account the threat and the foe and the villain or whatever, and that has to be an integral part of the score. So I was really going to give this a sky-high rating, but because I needed to take this into account, I was like, well, actually, no, this takes several decimal points off because there is nothing much there and there should be more. Yeah. I don't know what you think, about Donna and the Doctor.
Yeah. Do you know what sort of springs to mind? There aren't necessarily the most obvious parallels, but the vibe that I get is from Christmas Invasion, which is Tennant's very first episode. And that's an episode where you have an alien who doesn't really, you know, it's not an alien you can relate to. It's not an alien with a rich backstory. It's not an alien who's super sophisticated and you love his soliloquies. It's not that kind of alien. It's an alien who's an excuse to have Tennant do shit on screen so that you get to know him as a character, as this new version of the Doctor, even though largely he is comatose for that episode. But yeah, it's all an excuse to set up a context for the Doctor. I kind of like that. I may be shooting myself in the foot because I don't remember what I gave that episode. Yeah. But every now and then, Doctor Who, you know, veers in a certain direction, a new direction. It turns left, right? Every now and then, Doctor Who does something different and has to change it up. It gets either a new companion or a new Doctor, or something else drastic will happen to the show because it's not going to jump the shark, but it's going to jump something, you know? And just because time progresses and contracts run out and the show evolves. And every single time that it does that, we get this sort of break that eases us into the new era of Doctor Who, and this for me is one such break. Okay. And for that reason, I don't require a super sophisticated alien.
Okay. And there is only so much you can get done in 48 minutes.
Also true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, that was a very long monologue to say very little, but yeah, basically that's it.
So you've also got the parallels continuing. You've got Donna and the Doctor both interrogating very obliging people at their house about this fat reduction program they're on. And Donna's one is called Stacey, and she's putting on her fuck me earrings so that she can dump her boyfriend who isn't good enough for her anymore.
You can't fuck me anymore earrings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Her fuck off earrings.
Yeah, and the other guy,
Roger Davey,
who really doesn't need to lose any more weight.
Well, no, he's lost a kilo a night. He must be a good 2 stone off. Yeah, actually, you're right.
Why is he still on the program?
When he was wriggling around, it was like, where is he losing that from?
Yeah.
He's just good at wriggling. Is that how he passed the audition?
It's a slight layer of fat around his liver. Yeah. Really wants to lose that liver fat.
Which he needs.
Yeah.
Separating his liver from his kidneys to stop them digesting each other or whatever.
That's how it works, I think.
I stopped doing biology after A-level.
You're right, they are very obliging. The one thing that struck me about him, or his situation, and this is one of my 4 very sparse notes, it's the fact that later on, I feel like they missed a trick. He says to the Doctor, at 1 a.m. every night, at 1:30 or whatever, he wakes up because the alarm goes off. And we get that scene of the cat flap. And the Doctor goes, well, the thing about cat flaps is they don't just let things in, they let them out.
Yeah.
Fast forward to the end, he actually sees an adipose using the cat flap to leave and wave. Why didn't the alarm go off?
Oh, because that was when it was emergency activated, wasn't it? Oh, no. Oh, I see, because the alarm should go off whenever the cat flap is open.
Basically. And then for him, it would be like, click. Oh, this is what's been happening every night.
Yeah, you're right.
You know?
Massive goof.
I feel like that could have been... Well, I mean, it's not necessarily a blooper. Maybe it's too early. Maybe he turns on the alarm when he goes to bed or something like that. Like, maybe there's a very reasonable explanation for it, but I would have rather foregone that explanation and just had that moment where it clicks for him and he goes, ah, now I understand.
I get it. It's part of my subcutaneous lard.
Exactly.
Running for the hills.
Exactly.
I did like the Doc's cat people line. I've seen cat people. You're nothing like one.
Yeah. That's a good one.
There are a lot of good lines scattered throughout this episode, I thought. More than your average. Although, it was probably RTD, wasn't it? It smacks of RTD.
Mm.
I guess the next thing is the adipose themselves.
Yeah. They were very cute. Very cute. Very nicely animated. There are a few scenes where it just like, oh wow, they did they did a really good job of, like, you know, 3D mapping out the car that they climb onto, and it's very nicely done.
And the splatter sound effects under the taxi.
Yes, oh, that as well. I remember that. But then there's also that one scene where it's a little bit too obvious that either the scene was brought to post-production too late, or they had run out of money or something, and strategically, what's her face, Miss Foster, is always standing in front of wherever the adipose would be on the desk when the journalist is tied in front of the desk.
I didn't
it's like, oh, it's called an adipose, and then the journalist looks at it, the doctor looks at it, Donna looks at it,
yeah,
and no one can actually see it, and we can't see it either. Like, they obviously can, but we can never see it, regardless of angle. Just blow your load. This was the last scene out of the gate.
You couldn't afford 10,001.
Why are they all in the same vicinity? Is there not a... I mean, there's a truck, right, that comes to pick them up? Or is the idea... No, there's no truck.
They waddle off towards the tower block.
Yeah. You're right, sorry. You're absolutely right.
From where the signal originates, and so, I don't know, that seems to make...
Maybe it's just the 10,000 the closest to the tower?
Maybe, but then the ship has to pick them all up. The ship's not going to leave any of its family behind, any of its new offspring.
What if it did? Well, do we know? Did they count them? No, they didn't. There's probably some adipose, as in plural, scattered around London just going... Too late. Too late. You're now the new chew toy for the dog. Or you're going to be dissected and experimented on by the military forever. However long. Like, how long does it take for fat to die? A long time, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's the best store of energy there is.
Shit. Well, you're in for a treat, little baby, I suppose. You're going to be tortured by the military.
They're going to pull out your cute little snaggle tooth to find out why the hell you all have one.
No, I really liked them. I thought they were very sweet.
I did think that altogether there was a bit too much grumbly tummy in this episode, though. Like, yeah. They especially towards the end.
In the restaurant.
Yeah, my main complaint with that scene was you're supposed to feel the peril of a million people. A sixth or a seventh of London about to be digested by their own fat.
Yeah.
But what you get is you get the same three people wriggling over and over and over and over, maybe four, over and over and over and over and over, and over again. You get Roger, you get the mum's friend, you get the woman who's standing up looking like she's about to piss herself.
Oh, wait, hang on. That was the mum's friend.
The mum's friend was the one lying on her back on the floor going, oh, no, I don't understand.
I completely blanked on Donna's mum being one of the other ladies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She
totally
was,
banked
that
on
was
it.
Her friend Savina or whatever.
I'm totally racist when it comes to little old ladies, clearly. They all look the same to me.
Yeah, if they were Cribbinses, you'd remember them.
Absolutely.
Patriarchy,
oh,
man.
On, patriarchy. I think it's the other way around, actually.
Go on.
You're saying we only got to see three or four wriggle around on the floor.
Yeah.
But we actually also were in one wine bar and three of the maybe, what? Let's make it 30 people. Three of the 30 people in that room.
Yeah.
I.e. 10% of them were wriggling around.
So fairly close to an accurate representation or proportion, you're saying?
No, I'm saying it's crazy. 10% of London wasn't wriggling around.
Oh, yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Or is it that people who are into, you know, liposuction and adipose industries, alien technology, are more likely to go out and have a social life?
Yeah, yeah. It's a subtle commentary on how drinking too much wine turns you into a fat bastard. Right?
Or a really superficial one.
Yes.
Actually, yeah, that's it.
Subtle, superficial. Barely scratching the surface is what we're saying. My point about the adipose was you got the belly rumbling, you got the shoulder, you've even got the bingo wings at one point from the, from Stacy. Not the boobs. The boobs stay completely immobile.
That would have been too much. That would have been way too much.
But boobs are mostly fat and some sundry glands.
Yeah, so now imagine on this kid-friendly family show, a pair of tits suddenly running across the road.
Doing a samba. Underneath the shirt. Oh, come on. How good is that scene you're all imagining in your heads right now?
Pretty great.
Yeah.
Pretty great. I don't think that it belongs in this show, though.
I was waiting for it throughout. Or maybe I was just staring at the tits. I mean, I don't know. So, yes, that was my entirely well thought through and considered.
What did you think of the ending where all of these little adipose babies are saved? They're all rescued. They're all rescued.
Yeah, it's nice.
And what else? Oh, right. And the foster mother is sacrificed.
Yeah. Looking, well, she starts off Mary Poppins without the umbrella, ends up Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah. How come she stopped right in front of the doctor?
That is one of my notes as well.
Oh, really?
If you care to believe me.
I do believe you.
Okay. What do you think of the doc's flux capacitor, which he uses to track down the adipose with?
Very nice. A great reference. Very good comparison. I like it. I like that he has a different gadget, as in a gadget other than the sonic screwdriver.
Which he uses 15 times. Well, actually, no. There are 15 sonic uses in this episode, but they're not all him.
It made me think of, kid you not, it made me think of a Hartnell device.
Really?
So William Hartnell also at one point had a device that he used as sort of a tracker, you know, like a tracking device. Except it was much bigger, much clunkier. And do you know what it was called?
No.
It was called a reacting vibrator.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, that's in the episode The Savages. It's pretty great.
Did that warrant a comment at the time, perhaps?
I think so. I think it may have come up in conversation. Actually, that was a solo. It may have come up in soliloquy. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it was nice. And we also didn't have to watch him building it out of pencils and rubbers and needles and string.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're so right. Because otherwise, we clearly would have had had a little sequence, a little unnecessary montage where he bites down on a pencil as he's figuring something out. Ugh.
Yeah.
So annoying. Very glad we didn't get that. Okay.
As we're cycling through the episode now, I liked the shot specifically of shot from above of the brick wall where they're just out of sight. He's down a side street and she's in the main road and they just can't quite see each other.
Oh, I don't remember.
You know,
that.
Like the line of houses ends and he's round the corner and she's over there and he's over here. Or from your perspective, the other way around.
Okay.
And they're both wondering where they go next. He's running after the Adipolice in their van because they've stolen the Adipose.
Great name.
and they've given him the slip and he's like, oh, I'll run off in this direction. And she runs off over there. It's like, they still haven't met. The tension is unending and unbearable.
I don't remember that scene.
Oh, brilliant. It's so memorable.
Oh my goodness. Wasn't it just? That was fantastic. Love that scene.
Leap fool.
Okay. Speaking of, they still haven't met and the tension is running high. Rose shows up in this one.
Yes, she does.
See, I don't remember Turn Left that well.
Well, so that's a few. That's nearer the end of this series than the beginning. So,
but I mean, I don't remember, which I'm assuming is the next time that she and Donna will meet, right?
Oh, maybe.
So I don't remember if there's ever a moment where they go, wait, it's you. I've met you before. I can't remember that.
Yeah.
But, oh man, such a small world. Actually, it feeds into the same category of why does everyone need to be related, you know? But
string, jam.
String and jam, yeah.
That board is three-dimensional. There are pins on top of string on top of other pins.
I'm assuming this is probably incredibly obvious, and again, I don't remember what happens, but I'm assuming that she's been doing the exact same thing that Donna has. Like, she's gone to somewhere where there are aliens, where something weird is happening, because she is assuming she will meet the Doctor.
You think she'd be a bit more dynamic and also not fade into nothingness, though? Something really different is going on there, surely.
Oh, definitely something different is happening. Maybe she has to be... I don't remember! Oh,
unhelpful is she, by the way? Donna's like, oh, and I'm giving you all these really specific directions, and if you don't follow them, my mum hasn't got a car anymore. All right, bye.
This is now your responsibility. I'm not just a crazy person who gesticulates way too much.
Yeah, and instead, Rose, the pouty ghost, just turns and fades and is like, fuck it.
Wait,
fuck
she
it
fades? No, she doesn't fade. She walks away.
And fades.
Wait, she does?
She fades. She vanishes. She evanesces.
Okay, this is the moment where I say, I watched this on my phone on a bumpy bus. I missed that. I missed that she fades. I thought that she was back in our universe and she's been doing the same thing. She fades?
You thought she was transported back into the other universe by a pothole or something?
No, I thought that she was suddenly in this universe. I didn't remember this. I didn't notice. And I didn't remember anything from what comes... Oh my goodness.
No, yeah. There's a big mystery afoot here.
Oh, you just blew my mind. I'm gonna rewatch that ending, that tiny little bit.
Great. That's not too late at all.
What's so sad then? So she's faded back into... Well, okay, hang on. You know so much more about this than I do.
No, I don't.
Explain this.
I don't know whether that's Rose from the other universe, whether this is Rose from an alternate timeline and what that has to do with Turn Left. It is as much a mystery to me as it is to you.
Because you don't remember or because it's never explained?
Because I didn't watch all of this series at the time.
Ah,
and
okay.
I can't actually remember how it's resolved, even if I did see it.
So what do you think at this point?
At this point, I would have to guess that... Do you know what? I can't make any sense of it.
I'm assuming that she's the same Rose we met before. She's in the parallel dimension, and she's found a way to cross over to our dimension temporarily, and maybe when there is an alien presence, she figures, this is the time. I'm going to do it now because I may run into the Doctor.
Oh, and now the adipose
are
gone.
So little time. Yeah, exactly.
That's why she's so glum.
Yeah, the adipose are gone, and she's probably missed her chance to meet the Doctor.
Yeah, very possibly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she is sort of doing... Well, I'm guessing she's doing sort of the same thing Donna was doing, except she's doing it from her universe, and her work is more focused on, let's figure out when I can next cross over, and let's figure out when the next chance to meet the Doctor is.
Maybe. Also, I thought that scene was good because of two things.
Okay.
One was that Donna had left the Doctor around the corner.
You're obsessed with that scene.
No, this was a completely different corner scene.
Oh my goodness, so many corners.
Yeah. It's okay. All about the corners and when the Doctor's out of sight and what's going on and when are they going to meet and why are they apart and all that stuff. Basically, okay. They should just be side by side throughout for the rest of the show. But...
No.
I'm betraying
her around the corner. Please put her around the corner.
Throughout that scene, yeah. I knew that tension was building. And I thought the dramatic tension was going to be resolved by her going back around the corner and the Doctor's bolted. He's like, fuck all these hats. Why would I take her to the planet of the hats? Who says that? I'm just going to leave her like I leave everybody and be moody and alone, and she'll have to find him another week in a different place. And I thought that was what was going to happen.
Or I'll just find someone else.
Yes.
Someone who's less annoying, less needy.
Yeah, someone who's more of a doormat. Someone who I can just insult to their face and they'll take it.
No, not necessarily.
Someone who is not worthy to share screen time with me, basically Jesus Christ.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me. One episode ago, he was totes malotes on board for bringing Kylie on board, right? He was on board for bringing Kylie onto the TARDIS. And
yeah, and look how that turned out. She's Stardust now, man.
Yeah, that's not his fault, though.
Oh, it completely was. He was like, he should have been just like, no, you just stay here and we'll go off through the rest of the ship and we'll take care of ourselves. You basically not help us in any way. You're going to be cannon fodder. I mean, look at you. Look how adorable you are.
But that is sort of what he said, and she did the... Okay, no. I call circumstance on that one.
Okay.
But he was ready to meet up with someone new, and I'm sorry, just based on these two episodes, well, I guess these three episodes, I'm now thinking of Runaway Bride as well. Kylie's clearly the one that I would prefer. Oh, this was the tangent that I was going to bring up before.
Great.
I remember two things about Donna Noble's time on Doctor Who. Not having remembered how long that time is, but I remember two things. One, that I found her fucking annoying as hell. And two, that I found the writing incredibly good. And I don't know if I'm very possibly I'm wrong about both. I don't know. But I remember, I now think that I remember thinking that back then.
We'll have to deal with that more fully as the series goes on.
Yeah.
One thing I did notice, and this is extremely nerdy in just a numerical aspect.
Okay.
But I went looking for the ratings on this on IMDb because, as I say, I was having trouble determining my own rating.
Yeah.
And I looked at this and it got a pretty good rating. I think this, of all the 9 series, is the most consistent. Like, you've got Fear Her in number 2, and you've got Sleep No More in number 9, and they're the worst. And you've got all these ones from all the other series, and the lowest series 4 one is really high up.
Really?
So, yeah, I think we're in for a good year.
Excellent.
Oh, despite or because of Donna Noble, because she just injects verve.
Oh, I don't know, man. Oh, man. Okay, I look forward to hopefully changing my mind. I also need to think about what kind of rating I'm giving this episode.
Yeah. Okay. I've got a thing.
Okay, go for it.
Let's reenact the whole, because we need to stretch this episode out, but let's reenact the whole mouthing scene and the lip reading scene right now. Let's go.
On the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Shit, I can't believe the whole thing got auto-truncated. The whole thing! It was so good.
Very nice.
Yeah, it was... you had to be there. So I did mention the overuse of the sonics earlier. And any time the Doctor has a door he needs to open or shut, he can't use the handles that are there. Or like when he's in the cradle, the window cleaner's cradle. You can't press a button and go up. He's zapping the cables? How do the cables react to the sonics?
I don't know.
This happens over and over again. They have a sonic battle over those cables.
Yeah. They were basically lightsabers at this point, / laser blasters.
Yeah, or laser screwdrivers, except the master isn't there.
Yeah, I mean, he sonics her sonic out of her hand at one point.
Yeah, he does.
I don't mind it. It seemed like a pastiche of what, you know, the sonic screwdriver should be or how it should be used. It was was fine. I was happy with it. I was completely okay with it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
What I wasn't happy
with...
You
will overlook a lot just to be angry about Donna Noble and Donna Noble alone, won't you?
No,
like, she's the sole focus of your ire. Everything else is fine.
100%. I'm just saying that's not necessarily a bad thing or an unreasonable way to react. No, I thought that was okay. I liked that there was another person with a Sonic. As in, I liked that one scene where he goes, not unless she has a Sonic, and I sincerely doubt that she does. Cut to, she has a Sonic. You know, great. I liked that. That was kind of fun. What I didn't like about that whole scene was the, oh, apparently it's super easy to just deadlock a building, which is the one thing that a Sonic can't get through. Oh, but wait, hang on. It turns out if you have two Sonics, you can get through it. What?
Yeah. There's a lot of very simple arithmetic. Oh, she's doubled it. Oh, what can I possibly do?
Yeah, exactly. I only had one more pendant. That sequence wasn't very well fashioned, I thought.
No, yeah. Also, when they're down there, that is, I'm certain,
yeah,
the same corridor and the same cupboard they used underneath
the Rachnos
key building. Yes, the Rachnos.
Yes, when they were going to the Rachnos. You're right. I think you're right.
So that looked exactly familiar to you as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't think about it at the time, but now that I'm thinking back on it, yes, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Also, to go back to the cradle, can you soundbite them falling to hear Donna and the Doc going at it? Because if you listen to that in isolation of what's on the screen, they are pounding away like nobody's business.
Wow. A completely different image springs to mind when I hear someone say that they're pounding away. But yeah, this would be one of those scenes that I didn't like. This is her turning into Donna.
What, you think that when she's dangling 100 feet off the ground, she shouldn't be allowed to be a bit shouty about it?
Well, she can be shouty about it, but she shouldn't be... She just shouldn't be so...
Strident? Womanly? What is it?
She's not strident! She's... What she is terribly annoying, unnecessary so, irrationally annoying, and irrationally annoyed. Perhaps that's the thing. She's always acting as though she's tremendously annoyed by the goings on around her. And so, for example, he tries to save her by grabbing her legs. She should be panicking. Under normal circumstances, anyone, if you were hanging there, if I were hanging there, we clearly would be going like, ah, help me. Oh my God, yes, you got my legs. Oh, please help me. Don't
let
me
fall. What she's doing?
No, she's like, get off my legs. Get off my... I can't do the Donna voice. You know, it's just she's super annoyed by everything he does. And, oh, I look what you did. Look, you've ruined everything.
Oh, it's always like this with you.
Exactly.
But then a second later,
super annoyed.
She's smiling again and they're chummy and off they go to their next adventure. So, okay, she has a paroxysm of rage, but I was completely charmed by how she's
able
to...
I'm going to put that down to an abrupt writing pattern.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know. As someone who's quite irascible, maybe it's just that. I mean...
God, you're just dropping words left,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I completely are. I completely are. Fuck!
Well, you dropped something there.
The ball. So, yeah, as someone who's just prone to fits of rage, I reckon I'm probably just got more affinity for her than you do, because you're a cool, calm, unflappable customer.
Yeah, I don't have a temperament. No, I reckon that either I was simply wrong back in 2007, 2008, whenever this was, I can't remember. Either I was simply wrong, or I was not in the optimal position to appreciate her because I hadn't been subjected to her form of comedy before. I mean, she's a comedian, right?
Yeah, she had the Catherine Tate show as a comedy sketch show. In fact, she's on tour now.
Or she has a different show, maybe. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I don't know. Regardless, I didn't like her back then. I'm not very fond of her right now. Wait, what am I saying? I don't even know. You didn't ask this. What did you ask?
I don't know. You're just riffing on, God, I hate Donna Noble, and that's the way I'll always stay.
Yeah.
Well, you're wrong. We got 12 episodes left. We'll convert you.
Mm.
We haven't even mentioned the journalist at all.
Oh, goodness. All right. So that's another one of my whatever it was, 3 or 4 notes. It's, why would you tie... Hang on, wait, I'm going to read it out. What did I say? Why tie up the reporter but not want to waste time on the doctor and ugh? That's my note.
Who's ugh?
Donna. Because they're like, oh, no, no time to waste. Go and kill them. But then why tie her up?
Yeah, she's just got loose. She's like, okay, I'm going to saunter down the stairs. Oh, no. Okay, go back to the beginning through the laborious process of tying her up again while the other two...
No, kill her.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, turn her into adipose. If you're keeping her alive because you don't want to... waste precious birthing material, then keep her alive for that reason, but then don't tie her up. Put her somewhere else. So, like, shove a pill into her mouth and put one of those pendants around her neck or something.
Right, for the bio-stitching.
Exactly. Yeah. No, makes no sense. I thought she was an okay bystander.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, there's not much to say.
No.
She was pretty flat. Okay.
I wasn't very entertained by her walking away still tied to the chair at the end. I thought that was kind of a failed joke.
Yeah.
Like just a flat gag.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were going to say something there.
I was going to read out from my notes because you just read out from your notes.
Okay, go for it.
Doc electrocutes, stuns the lackeys. Sonic use number 15. Sonic use number 16. Buzz is a thing. Just anything the Doctor has to interact with in this
Buzz
episode.
Buzz is a thing.
He Sonics it. Everything.
Okay.
What did you think about the quieter moments Doc and Donna had in the cupboard together while he was catching her up on his failed love life? Was that not...
It was a good moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say that. That was a good moment. But that was a good moment because of, thanks to, Tennant.
Oh.
Not so much the rest. I really liked that she remembered his life, his circumstances enough to ask about Rose. I thought that was quite nice.
Did you not like the bit where she was talking about how she went to Egypt, but then she came back two weeks later and it was all the same?
Sorry, totally blanked on that. Yes, I did like that. That lent her an air of humanity that actually was very relatable. It's that, we're sitting at home, we're watching Doctor Who because we, out of escapism, like we just want to escape into the stars and time, the vortex and so on and so forth. We want to go on this adventure. We can't. Let's go somewhere else. Oh, it just pales in comparison. It's not the same thing.
Yeah, after 45 minutes, you have to talk to your family again.
So... Yeah, imagine now actually having had that adventure once and then having been left at the altar by a dude who was secretly boning a spider lady. Must be really tough to be without the Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
such
I like
range.
That.
Such range she displayed.
Goddamn
such an actress.
Apologist.
Yeah, we're getting towards the end.
Yeah, do you have any final points to bring up?
One line Donna drops on the Doctor later on when she says, so you're going to kill all these cute little fat kids floating up into the sky then? And he goes, no, actually, I'm going to let these ones off. And she goes, oh, that's a nice change from being a homicidal, genocidal maniac.
Oh my goodness, you're so right, because the last time he killed millions upon millions of spider kids.
Yeah, he destroyed an entire species, which the whole rest of the season he was apparently completely against.
Yeah.
It's just because they happen to be quite an old species. And so she's been all whimsical and dreamy, and I'd wait 100 years for this mad murderer to come back into my life.
You're so right. She's just totally glazed over this, but then in the back of her mind, she's fully aware and in denial. Super good points.
So one last thing.
Okay, go for it.
I thought that the adipose mothership was beautiful.
Agreed. Oh, wow. A stunning, stunning piece of CGI. That's where the money went, isn't it?
Even the way it blew off away from the camera at warp speed through space, even that was lovely.
Yeah. Well done. I'm very curious, actually. I don't know if they're using some sort of effects house or if it's all in-house at the BBC. I have no idea, but it's super nicely done.
Yeah, and it's really coming on. I mean, in 3 years, it has come on leaps and bounds.
Oh, yeah. Compare this to the rubbish bin in Rose that eats Mickey Ricky. This is an entirely different world.
Yeah. One last quibble.
One last thing, and then we're getting to the minis, dude.
Why does he chuck away the sonic pen? There's no way Donna would need this. He just throws it in a bin.
Does he?
Yes.
Oh, another thing I missed. God damn you, Oxford buses.
I want to know how many episodes, how many positions of peril through the rest of this series, if Donna just had a sonic pen that she knew how to use, that would be it. I suppose that's why they had to throw it away, because one magic wizard stick is... lubricant enough to get out of any situation.
Well, he's already leaving all that alien tech he's leaving the entire building intact and the whatever it was, the crazy birthing reactor inside it, completely intact, untouched.
Yeah.
Anyone, the next person to go in there, the landlord goes in there, it's like, well, I guess I have to rent this out to someone else now. Wait, what's this? I'll just try to pull this lever. Vroom. Adipose all over the place. Oh, by the way, he does nothing to counteract this. It's not like he comes up with a way to neutralize the effect on people. He leaves a gigantic, please pull me signed lever that, when pulled, will turn a million people in, was it England or in London?
London.
In London alone, a million people will be turned to adipose, who in turn will then be dissected by Torchwood. So,
oh, yeah.
The incredibly irresponsible behavior on the part of the Doctor.
Yeah.
I think him chucking away a sonic pen is nothing.
And okay.
And in fact, it's probably not a bad thing, because how many of those do you want, you know?
Yeah.
The sonic screwdriver is fantastic because it's something that most people don't have in this universe. And the people who have had them have all been, as in the people who have used sonic technology in general, have all been quite special people. You know, you've had River Song, you've had the Master. You don't want everyone to have this. And if every companion is going to have their own sonic device as well, then it's just going to be really ridiculous.
Well, Miss Foster had her own sonic device and she's dead already.
Yeah, but that's my point. Like, oh, well, she had that because just as an item, a device, if you will, to establish that she was alien.
Some lip reading going on here. Yeah. What I mean is that you've brought down the threshold to practically nothing. Now everyone can have one.
Yeah, but that's my point. That's why he throws it away.
Yeah, okay.
Because we can't let everyone have one, I think.
No, you're right. It would make plotting impossible. So one last point. One last point.
One last one, that's all you get.
Because I was leading up to this earlier, but I didn't get in because didn't get to say it because we got off on a tangent.
Okay.
Which was that when all that dramatic tension is building up earlier, where you think that the Doctor's going to split and Donna's going to be left on the street.
Yeah.
And she's talking to this faithless blonde bystander.
Yeah.
Of whom all we can see is the hair. I think that she does a really great job in not giving away in her face that she is talking to Rose and that it's going to be a jaw-dropping revelation in a couple of seconds.
Okay, but two things, please.
Okay.
Numero uno, she, as in the character, has never met Rose. I feel like you're complimenting her for basic acting.
No, I'm complimenting Catherine Tate on looking at Billy Piper and knowing the significance of this jam-soaked thread that RTD is dangling in front of our faces that only she can see, and not giving it away. It made the reveal that much more incredible.
Okay. All right. Well, okay, hang on. That was numero uno. Numero dos.
Bring it on!
Didn't you sort of recognize Rose, though?
No, not at all.
Really?
It shocked me to my core.
Really?
Yes, it really did. I mean, okay, I'm not the most perspicacious viewer, perhaps, and I don't have the best memory. But, yeah. Took me completely by surprise.
See, I don't know if this is my subconscious playing a trick on me, but I really feel like I wasn't that surprised by it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's easy in hindsight to be like, well, of course she comes back, and of course she never leaves.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm not entirely sure now if maybe my mind has convinced itself that no, you knew this all along, and in fact I didn't. I'm not sure. But I don't feel like that was... That's better writing than it is acting.
Okay.
You know, I would congratulate the jam and string factories, the jam and string makers of this world.
Of Wales.
Rather than Donna Noble.
Okay. Well, it was a noble attempt.
I guess it was certainly a noble attempt. Okie dokie. Do ba 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 ba. Dibbidi beep beep boop boop ba. And now it is time to rate this.
Did we love or hate this?
Bing bong bing bong. Hey hey la 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 la.
Ratings. Right. I know that this is now called ratings. I didn't realise that this was coming into effect immediately, and so I've got an old-fashioned review to wibble and wobble my way around. Another point is that we have listener minis coming up, which, thanks to the timey-wimey continuum of who back when, I already know what they say.
Ooh.
Because we've already read them out. And and they make some good points, which make my rating seem a little on the high side, but I'm going to stick with it. Just for the pure enjoyment I got from this episode, I thought this was really, really, if not good, then enjoyable. Mm. There are a few criticisms. Sarah Lancashire's Lazarus Light was waffer-thin. There could have been more interesting character dynamics explored there. But everyone else had a great time. Tennant was pleasant. Tate was great. Cribbins was ripping, flipping brilliant. The show showed off some new tricks. There were too many Sonics, but there were lots of clever bits. The parallels, the opening 20 of Constant Tension, and a good ending. I thought the ending was going to fizzle out, but actually I really enjoyed the Doctor and Donna and Rose, and goodness sake, so much is going on. It was fun. I'm giving it a 4.0, and you cannot argue me down one tittle.
That would be a fool's errand, I'm sure. Wonderful review. Okie dokie, I'm going to keep it very, very brief, because I knew that this was going to be the rating section as opposed to the review section. So here are my bullet points. While I'm rating this up...
Yeah, up.
For Cribbins.
Yeah.
And for the way that they set up a new character, and for actually a really interesting alien plot, even though it wasn't delved into at all.
Can you imagine if they'd marketed them like Universal did with the Minions? The BBC would be rolling in
they
cash.
Would be filthy rich. They'd be fat cats.
We can have a series of Doctor Who this year.
While I'm rating it up for all of that, I'm also bringing it back down. Not because of Don Noble, but
you're not doing the adipose. You're doing Nibbler from Futurama. That's what you're doing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm also not doing the paragraphs. I've now jumped into a review, haven't I?
Yes. Sorry. Carry on.
Sorry. She was okay.
She was okay.
But that's mainly because I felt like this was paradoxically a Donna Light episode. Oh. As I said, she was really annoying to me the second she turned into more of Donna.
What's that supposed to mean?
Exactly that. Okay. Super annoying. Never do that again. No, feel free to prove my point. But mainly I'm bringing this down because I can't take this kind of episode too seriously. So I am giving this a 3.0.
That's still better than I expected.
Yeah, definitely. And if I give future episodes really good marks, I expect that it will be because of the directing and the writing and because of Tennant or whatever characters have shown up in that episode.
Yeah, that's right. Whatever.
Not the companion, necessarily.
Yeah, we'll see. You can't keep this charade of denial up forever.
Shall we listen to some listener minis?
Yeah, let's. Listener minis. So, do we have listener minis, then?
We do. You have begged and pleaded for Podcastland to send something in for New Who, and Podcastland has responded. We have not one, but two.
Wow!
Listener minis for this New Who episode.
Plural minis.
Plural, indeed.
I'm feeling a deep sense of contentment right now. Well, let's crack into the first one, shall we? Who's it from?
This first one comes from Tracy!
Nice, two in a row. Tracy's here to stay.
She is indeed. She's hello, Tracy!
Been on the podcast more than Marie at this point.
Yes, well done, Tracy. Tracy has also stuck to the rules.
Thank you, Tracy.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You didn't present us with an unenviable dilemma.
Tracy has provided 250 words. Consequently, we shall read her mini-review in its full splendor. Shall I start this one? Do you want to start this one?
Go for it, man.
Okie dokie. She goes, I am Tracy, here goes a mini. Okay, not gonna lie, this episode really skeeved me out. Squealing grey one-toothed baby things that go splat when squashed. And what is it with Doctor Who and traumatic/forced births? Oh, whoa. I hadn't thought about that. Hmm. Because that's what all these people taking pills went through. New life was forced from them without their consent. Fast forward to later on, spoilers, we have Amy giving birth under traumatic, non-consensual circumstances, and even Clara allowing the moon to hatch against the wishes of the entire planet Earth. My God, am I the only one seeing these parallels?
Well, we certainly didn't. Thank you, Tracy. That's a good point.
Whatever, she goes on, rant over, moving on. End of spoilers. I found it deeply unsatisfying the way Doc and Donna kept missing each other during the first half of the episode. Ooh, nice. Okay. Controversial. But, she says, I suppose it makes the payoff better when they do eventually meet up. And the pantomime across the room scene was absolute perfection.
Yeah, bellissimo. Character stuff. It's nice to see Donna taking so much initiative. For the first few minutes of the episode, my thought was that the Doctor had inspired Donna to be this total badass detective, like Sarah Jane of the Sarah Jane Adventures. It would have been so much cooler if they didn't play up the looking for the Doctor aspect so much. Does this have to be the primary reason Donna is doing it? Lastly, oh my god, is this preview prophetic? There's both Peter Capaldi and Karen Gillan. I don't actually understand that. Oh, because looking forward
coming
to...
Coming up, yeah.
Okay.
Is Karen Gillan in that?
I don't know.
I don't remember seeing Karen Gillan. Has she had a different role in Doctor Who?
IMDb it!
I'm IMDbing it right now. Give us the rating first.
The rating is vanilla ice cream with a ladybug.
Excellent rating, couldn't agree more. Okay, so there are a couple of things that I really just want to point out. Numero uno, we haven't talked about this at all. Yeah, a million Londoners were basically raped in this episode.
Yeah, actually.
Which is really quite horrific, and we laughed all the way through this review. It didn't dawn on me until this mini.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to think about rape too much, and so in a way, I sort of simplistically equate it with penetration, but no, rape extends beyond that, so yeah.
That's, wow. I really feel like that needs to affect our ratings a little bit. I did have another point, and that was that she says it would have been better if Donna weren't looking for the doctor.
Right.
I thought that was incredibly clever. I see the appeal of, now she's got an interest in this, and she's off on her own adventures, and then through sheer happenstance, her and the doctor's paths, they cross, and, you know, so on and so forth. But I thought it was incredibly clever of Donna to want to find the doctor by doing this.
Yeah, and I thought it was building on the earlier parallel of Elton's Sado Look for the Doctor Club with Mr. Victor Kennedy.
Oh, very good point. I hadn't thought about that at all. Yeah. Super good point.
And this seemed a much better way of going about it, and yeah. It was an excellent device by RTD to do so. So, I see a point, but I can't agree.
All right, fair enough. Shall I IMDb Karen Gillan?
Yes, yes.
Oh.
So, is Tracy right?
I believe so.
People can't just land on the show once, can they? They've got to bounce in and bounce out, and then they get a lasting role.
Yeah, she also appeared in The Fires of Pompeii.
So next week?
Next week, we're going to get Karen Gillan and Peter Capaldi. Apparently she appears in Fires of Pompeii as Soothsayer.
Right, so we should watch very closely next week to see who pops up in Series 10.
Oh my goodness.
From that episode, which is apparently just a casting call for the future of Doctor Who.
That's really amazing.
Wow. Good spot, Tracy.
Yeah, well done, Tracy. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land, if you want to congratulate Tracy on this spiffing listener mini, you can do so on Twitter, where she's found at... Oh my goodness, how am I going to pronounce this? Okay. Tracy, how is this pronounced? Yekat Niet Noof. That's Fountain Tracy backwards.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Next up,
Red Claire.
Hello, Claire.
And we have to preface this by saying we have truncated this review massively, but not for reasons of quality. It is so well written.
It's a fantastic maxi review.
I dare say if Claire started her own Doctor Who podcast, I'd listen to it.
I would probably tune in.
And it pains us to have to cut it down towards a 250-word limit.
So, Red Claire goes, Hi, Ponkin, JD, Nicolele, Drew Backwen, et al.
Hello.
There is a sharply observed satire here of a contemporary culture where the aesthetics of being thin are promoted to the detriment of genuinely healthy lifestyles, and where consumers are regularly tempted by a multiplicity of products that promise effortless weight loss without anyone really believing them. Finally, in Miss Foster, we are given an interestingly ambiguous villain who is presumed to be acting for personal profit, but actually seems to have developed some strangely maternal feelings for the alien infants she's bringing into the world. One that, sadly for her, is clearly not reciprocated by their biological parents.
Before I read my paragraph,
yeah.
I would say that was part of the backstory of Miss Foster that I thought wasn't fleshed out. Why does she have such care for these adipose, who don't even exist yet, she's just bringing them into existence, and yet is so contemptuous of humanity?
Doesn't she say that, that's definitely something that isn't explored at all, but doesn't she say that she's with some sort of agency?
I don't know.
Doesn't she say that? Like, it's sort of a nanny agency, or a...
Oh, possibly. So she's just very committed to a job.
I guess, I guess this is a job that she pursued because of her maternal instincts.
Oh, maybe. And yet, she's got such love for this species' life, a species of which she is not a member.
Yeah, they're a client.
Yeah, and yet this other species of which she isn't a member... whatever. Just
because they're not a client.
Yeah, break them down.
They're just fat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
We're trying to explore the unexplored here.
Yeah.
Not getting very far, so I'll get onto that paragraph now.
Okie dokie, go for it.
On the other hand, there are some distinctly problematic elements. Despite the sharp satire of the pressure for effortless weight loss, there are several points where this episode unfortunately falls straight into that same culture of fat shaming. Editorial comment. Which we talked about last episode, and which therefore is now a trend.
Very true.
Yeah. back to the paragraph, mm-hmm. with fart jokes straight before an innocent woman dies a horrifying death, consumed by the birth of alien beings, and an incongruously light tone that is hard to imagine any TV show taking for the mass death of thinner, more conventionally attractive people.
Ooh.
It also seems a little incongruous that the Doctor, who once fought to the death to prevent the human race being consumed for the birth of a new generation of Wirral, back in the Ark in space, he never seems keen to hold the adult adipose to account for their plan to consume vast numbers of the same race for the creation of their next generation. Yeah, the Doctor's morality, again, maybe all over the place.
Hang on, so he doesn't hold them, what, to account for their plan to consume humans?
Yeah, he essentially says to Foster Mother, I know you've broken the law. His focus at that point is, I'm trying to save you from being killed by these people who are just going to fly off in their ship and get away with it.
But they don't know about it. The reason that they kill Foster is because they just found out that she's been using a planet illegally to create more of their species, right? And they're just... Isn't that what he says? They're going to sacrifice her to get rid of the evidence or the co-conspirator or something. The reason they're killing her is because, oh, they're not pleased at all. They didn't realize that she was using this planet illegally.
Well, either way, they're killing someone.
Oh, yeah,
and it's
definitely
a massive abdication of responsibility.
Oh, absolutely. And even if they thought that we were just, you know, cattle, it's still life being sacrificed for other life, which I suppose is actually not that different from cattle. But yeah, you see what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Overall, Red Claire would give this episode a 3.2 out of 5. Her Twitter handle is @the_pale_queen.
Hello, the Pale Queen. And thank you very much for sending that in, the Pale Queen.
Such a good review. And you can find the whole maxi on whobackwhen.com.
Goddamn right.
And
you
it
can.
Is all worth reading. And there are more trenchant insights that we just didn't have the time to read out.
Okie dokie. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land. Drew.
Yeah.
Anything you want to plug? Do you have a Twitter handle or something? Some means of communication that the good ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land could utilize to get in touch with you?
Indeed. I am found on Twitter @DrewBackWhen.
Fantastic. And if you want to high-five me, please do. I will high-five you right back. I am @Ponkin. You know how to spell that. Until next time, it should most likely be a classic, in which case it is The Crotons. The next New Who is going to be, Drew,
The Fires of Pompeii.
And I'm doubly excited to watch that now. And the next Audio Who still is The Cannibalists.
Still.
Still. Thanks again for listening. Catch you in the next one. Be rad and excellent to each other, ladies and gentlemen. Cha-chow.
Ka-chow!
Blammo. Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's @WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When?